Tonight's shiur is on this week's parsha, which is Parshas Lech Lecha, and the title of the shiur tonight is Hagar's Conversation with Angels. So tonight the shiur is going to focus on the whole story of A, how Hagar was kicked out, and B, her conversation with the Malachim and the lesson and the lessons that we can derive from the story. So I figured we would, you know, refresh ourselves with the story. I'm going to read through the psukim and just summarize the facts of the story. And I pulled out some interesting Rashis that I think will help us develop a theme and an idea, a main concept, in the story of Hagar and the Malachim. Also, if anybody has questions on just the facts and the psukim, just ask the question. Okay, so we'll start with the first pasuk, which is, it's Parak Tes Zayin, pasuk Aleph. V'sarai eshes Avram lo yalada lo v'lo shivcha mitzris ushma Hagar. Avram had a wife who didn't have any children. She couldn't have children, Sarai. And she had a maidservant named Hagar who was mitzris. She was Egyptian. Vatomer Sarai el Avram hinena atzarani Hashem miledes bono el shivchasi ulai ibanem imena v'yishma Avram lekol Sarai. Sarai's plan is that she recognizes she can't have children, and she says that here's my maidservant. She gives the maidservant to Avram in order to have children so that Sarah can raise a family through the maidservant. And Avram listened to her. And Gimel, Vatikach Sarai Eshes Avram Esagar Hamitris Shivchasa Miket Esher Shanim Lashemes Avram Be'eretz Kanan Vatitain Osa LaAvram Isha Lo LaIsha. So Sarah took Hagar, her maidservant, who was Egyptian, after 10 years that they were living in Canaan, and she gave her to Avram as a wife. In Dalet, Vayavol Hagar Vatar Vatere Ki Harasa Vatekal Givirtah Beineha. Hagar gets pregnant right away, and what happens is that Sarah becomes small in her eyes, in the eyes of Hagar. Vatomer Sarai el Avram Chamasi Alecha Anochi Nasati Shivchasi Bechekecha Vatere Ki Harasa Vaikal Beinel Yishbot Hashem Beinu Veinecha. Sarah gets upset at Avram and she says, my anger is upon you because I gave you the Shivcha, this maidservant, and now I see that I'm small in her eyes. Hashem should judge between me and you. Vayomer Avram el Sarai Hine Shivchasech Biadech Asilo Hatov Beinayech Vateanel Sarai Vatevrach Mipanel. Avram says to Sarai, here's your maidservant, you can do whatever you want with her. And Sarai ends up, she ends up torturing her, and she escapes, Hagar escapes, she runs away. Vayimtso malach Hashem al ein ha-mayim ba-midbar al-ayin b'derech shur. A malach finds her by a fountain on the road to Shur, which is the name of a place. Vayomer, it says, Vayomer Hagar Shivcha Sarai Emizev Vos Va'ana Selechi Vatomer Vipnei Sarai Givirti Anochi Barachas. The Malach says to the maidservant of Sarai, where are you coming from and where are you going to? And she says back, I am escaping from my superior, my boss, Sarai. Vayomer Lo Malach Hashem Shuvi Al Givirtech Visani Tachas Adel. So the Malach says, go back to your boss, to your superior, and, you know, be afflicted under her hands and suffer the affliction. Vayomer lo malach Hashem harba arbe ezareich v'lo yisafer meirov. Another malach says that you'll have many offspring, and you won't even be able to count them. In Yudalef, we're up to Yudalef. Vayomer lo malach Hashem hinach harav yolatz bein v'karashimo Yishmael ki shama Hashem elonich. The malach then says, another malach says that you will have a child, and you will call his name Yishmael because Hashem heard your suffering. He's going to be a wild man, a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be upon all, and everyone's hand upon him, and before all his brothers he will dwell. Okay, we're coming to the end of the story. She named the place Kel Roi, the God of Seeing, because she said, and I'm reading the English, have I seen him here also after I have seen? That's why it's called Be'er L'chai Ro'i. It's between Kadesh and Bared. And then she ends up having a child in Tezvav. Vatelet Hagar la'Avram Bein, Vayikra Avram Shem Beno Asher Yalada Hagar Yishmael, Ve'Avram Ben Shmonim Shana V'Sheish Shanim Beledes Hagar Yishmael Avram. Okay, that's the end of the story. So to summarize the story, What happens is that Sarai, at that time she was still called Sarai, she realized that she wasn't going to have any children. She decides to give her maidservant Hagar, this Egyptian maidservant, to Avram in order to have children, and Sarai will help raise the child. And what ends up happening is that Sarah becomes less in her eyes, and Sarah gets upset. She ends up torturing her. She escapes. She has this whole conversation and encounter with Malachim, and then she ends up going back. And they have a child, and the name of the child is Yishmael. So that's the basic facts. Those are the facts of the story. And anybody have any questions, or is that clear? So any questions just off the bat on the facts of the story that we could ask? And maybe we'll take them up in the Rishonim and try to use them to develop the idea. Any obvious questions?
I have a question, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Makes sense. It seems to me,
yes,
that maybe it was the negative thing that Abraham had a child with Hagar.
Okay.
It's from like,
well, it was Sarah's idea. And Sarai,
right.
Sarah really pushed it upon Avram, and Avram wanted to have children.
Papa?
He has, what did you say? Avram.
Is it like Chava? Something on Avram?
Yes, but not exactly like that. There was a reason. Avram also wanted to have children. He has a chiyav peruvu, or he had a chiyav to have children, an obligation. So he needed to have children, and Sarah recognized that, and she was able to give Hagar to Avram, and Avram agreed with the plan. But any questions on the story? There's a couple, I think, more obvious questions.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, I have a question.
Please.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
You said Sarah tortured her?
Yes, Sarah tortured her. She made her, we're going to see what that means, but it's, she made her work really hard, extra hard.
Right. So then Hagar went away and then returned later.
Yes.
I'm just curious. I was just thinking, did anything happen with Sarah in terms of
Okay, good. Okay, so we'll see. What you mean, your question is, was it okay for Sarah to do this? Was it a flaw?
Right.
Okay, good question. We're going to...
It seems like it was fine, because it doesn't seem like, in whatever, she was reprimanded, it doesn't seem like there was maybe some consequences for torturing someone else.
Okay, so we'll see. That's a good question. Excellent question. And we'll see. The Rishonim take up that question. It's a good question. Oh, good answer. Excellent. We'll see.
No, I'm kind of joking. Okay.
No, but there is a Rishon, the Ramban, we're going to see. Says something along those lines. But good answer. Okay. Any other questions? I think one of the strange things is the different amounts of malachim going on here. There's a lot of malachim when it comes to her actually escaping. It says, Vayomer la malach Hashem, and it says again, Vayomer la malach Hashem. It says again and again. So that's another, I think, obvious question. Why do you need so many malachim? What's the point of that? And the main point, or the main question this year, which I think will become apparent by the end of this year, is what's the lesson of this whole story? What do we learn about Hagar and Sarah and their relationship in terms of that? What can we use and what can we learn and what can we derive? So let's get a little bit of background information. And I, like I said before, I picked out some Rashis. I didn't do every single Rashi, but the Rashis that I think are relevant. But I want to focus on the end of the story, the back and forth between the Malach and Hagar, and what the point of that was, what the purpose of it was. So let's look in Rashi. Rashi just tells us a little bit of background about Hagar. Who was Hagar? If you look at number 2 in Rashi, it says, Shivcha Mitzris. She was an Egyptian maidservant. Bas Paro Haisa. She was the daughter of Paro. Kishara nisim shinaase lisara amar mutav shitehe biti shivcha bevayze velogvira bevayze acher. When Paro saw all the miracles and the hashgacha that related to Sarah and the divine intervention, he said, it's better that my daughter be a maidservant in this house than be a boss, a superior, in a different house. The background of Hagar, which will play into the story and the idea of the story, is that Hagar was really the daughter of Paro, who is the king, and Paro had decided, and it seems like she went along with that she would be better off with Avram and Sarah rather than, you know, in her own household. Okay, so we'll start with that. That is the background. That is who she is. Let's go on. So what happened in the story? The Rashi gives us a little bit more information as to the details of the story based on the Midrashim. It says, Vatekal givirta be'ineha. What happened? Once Hagar got pregnant, Sarah became small in her eyes. Why? So Amra, look at number two. It's Rashi, Vatekal givirta be'ineha. Amra, Sarai zu ein sisra ki gluya. She said, Hagar said that this Sarai, this woman Sarai, her inside is not like her outside. Mare atzma ki ilu hi tzadekes ve'ina tzadekes. She comes off appearing like she's righteous, but she's not really righteous. Shelo zachsa leheirayon kol hashanim halalu va'ani nisabarti mibi arishona. It took her so many years, and she still didn't get pregnant. But me, the first time I was with Avram, I got pregnant. Okay, so the implication of Rashi is that Hagar is denigrating Sarai and saying that Sarai is not as perfected as people think, and really she's almost putting herself above Sarai because of the fact that she got pregnant. Okay, so what happens? What happens in the story? Anochi nasati shivchasi ben uvenecha. It says when Sarai gets angry at Avram, she says that Hashem should judge between me and you. And Rashi points out, he shows an interesting idea in Beinecha, kol beini uveinecha shebe mikra chaser. Anytime it says beini uveinecha, it's always missing that extra yud. If you look in Beinecha, in the psukim, there's an extra yud at the end, but normally there is no yud. So what's the purpose of leaving out the yud? Vezeh malei, this one's full. Kari be uveinayich. So you should read it a different way. Uveinayich, between me and you in the feminine, between Sarai and Hagar. Shechnisa ayin hara biibura shel Hagar vipila ubara. What happened was that Sarai, she sent an ayin hara towards Hagar and it caused a miscarriage. Hu shamalach omer lahagar hinach hara. That's what it means when the malach says to Hagar, you will get pregnant. Valo kfar harasa vuhu mevaser la shetahar. She already got pregnant, so what's he doing announcing that she's going to get pregnant? Ela melamed she pila heirayon harishon. So what happened was that Hagar's first child was miscarried because of Sarah. Okay, anybody have an idea what does it mean that Sarai, before we move on, and this is just to get background information, that what does it mean that Sarai sent an ayin hara to Hagar? So I think the basic concept, before we move on, is that there's a psychological component to ayin hara. Some people say it's jealousy. It's an idea in jealousy. And a pregnant woman, it's when there's tension, it's very easy that a pregnant woman can have a miscarriage easily due to the psychological tension and the psychological stress. So the idea that Rashi is expressing is that there's a tremendous amount of tension between Sarai and Hagar. And because of that tension, it caused Hagar to be mapil ubara, to miscarriage. And that's really part of the story. So the story, just to summarize, the story is that Hagar got pregnant originally, and she ends up denigrating Sarai. And as a result, Sarai, there's this tension and there's this jealousy, and it causes her, Hagar, to have a miscarriage ultimately. And then what's Sarah's response? It says, Vatanea Sarai, Debbie asks this question. What did she do? Haisa Mishubedes Ba Bekushi. She was working her very hard. It was very difficult for Hagar, and that's why she escaped at this point. Okay, are we good on the facts? Everybody have it? Somebody say yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, Debbie asked a question. Before we get to the, like I said, I want to focus on the point of Hagar's conversation with the Malachim, but I think it's important to get this background, and it will play into the answer and the main idea of the shir. Okay, so before that, Debbie asked a good question. Was it correct for Sarah to torture Hagar? Is there anything wrong with that? So if we look at the Ramban in number three, and this was actually mentioned by Karen on the phone line. It says number three, Ramban, it says, Vatanea Sarai vativrach mipaneha. It says that Sarai tortured Hagar and then she escaped. Chata imenu b'inui hazeh. So the Ramban says clearly that Sarah was wrong. And she was a chote with regard to this torture. V'gam Avraham b'hanicho lasos kein. And he even says that Avraham also was responsible by allowing this to happen. V'shama Hashem el anya v'nosan la bein shei para adam la'anoz zera Avraham b'sara b'chol minei ha'inui. Therefore, Hashem listened to Hagar's suffering, and she had a child who would be wild but be very powerful and would end up torturing Avraham and Sarah's children. In the future, the offspring, meaning Yishmael, will eventually be a thorn at Klal Yisrael's side. I want to leave off in explaining that idea for now, and I'm telling you, we will come back to that idea. But to answer Debbie's question, just the pshat answer, according to the Ramban, is that yes, she did do something wrong, and part of the story, and the end of the story, is that Hagar was her reward, or part of her reward, and the response was that Yishmael would end up causing pain and torturing the Jewish people, and we'll see how that makes sense later on. But it's a good question. Why should it be that one causes the other? How does one lead to the other? And what's the significance of that? Okay, so these are all just background, as I said before, but I want to get to the Malachim, and we'll come back to these ideas, these concepts. If you look at number four, one of the strange elements of the Malach is he says, Emi ze bas. And if you look at number four in Rashi, Pasuk Ches, Emi ze bas, Mehechan bas, where are you coming from? Yodea haya. The Malach knew where Hagar was coming from. He's a Malach, he knows. Elitin la pesach likanes ima bidvarim. He's giving her an opening to talk to her and to discuss and to have a conversation. V'lashon ei mizeh ayeh hamakom shetomar alav mizeh aniba. What does it mean, ei mizeh? Tell me, where is the place where you could say, this is where I come from, this is my homeland. Okay? So now we get into the questions on the Rishonim, on the Rashi. What's the question on this Rashi? What is the question? Why was it necessary for the Malach to engage Hagar in conversation? Just tell whatever the Malach has to tell Hagar, just tell Hagar. Why engage Hagar in the conversation? And there's other situations in Torah where we see that the same thing happens. Where do we see this? Anybody know? Where do we see where God or a Malach knows where somebody is and he says, nevertheless, where are you? So we see it by Adam Arishon. By Adam Arishon, number 5, after the Chait, it says, Ayeka, Yodea Haya Heichanhu. He knew where he was. El likanis nimo bidvarim. He wanted to engage Adam in conversation. Sheloye nivha lahashiv im yanishu pitom. Because if God were to just punish him right away, he wouldn't be able to respond. V'chein bekayin, amar lo e hevel achicha, v'chein bevilam, mi an hashima ela imach. Likanis imam bidvarim. Same thing in other cases. By Kayin, by Bilam. V'chein bechizkiya, b'shluche mrudach v'ladan. Same thing by Chizkiya. So you have other examples where God or a Malach knows where the person is, and nevertheless, there's a purpose of engaging them in conversation. So the same thing is happening over here by Hagar, but the question is why? Why was it necessary for the Malach to engage Hagar in conversation? By the other cases, by Adam, he was about to be punished, and he was a chote, and I understand. Maybe the idea is that Adam should recognize his sin, or he should be able to talk out his sin. But why was it necessary over here, in this case, by Hagar, that the Malach engage Hagar in conversation? Just tell Hagar what she wants to hear. Why is it likanis nima bidvarim? What's that concept? What's the idea? Okay, anybody have an answer to that, or... I'm gonna ask several questions, and it's all gonna come clear at the end. But anybody have any ideas for that point? Why did the Malach have to engage her in conversation? Okay, so we'll leave that question off. Go ahead.
Was Hagar wrong in leaving Sarai?
We'll see. We'll see if she was wrong. Good question. So we'll see. That's a good point. Was she wrong in leaving Sarai? So we'll see. Good point. I think there's some indication like that in Rashi, but I think we'll explain that further. Okay, excellent. Okay, so that's one question. Question number one on the Shir, and in the Shir, I guess, is why did the Malach have to engage Hagar in conversation? Just speak to Hagar, tell her, you know, you have to go back. Okay, fine. So let's go on. Look at number 6. It says, Vayomer lo Malach, in number 6, Pasuk Tes, Al kol amira haya shaluach la malach acher. For each statement, there was another malach that came. L'chach nemar malach b'chol amira v'amira. That's why it says a malach with regard to each statement. So for some reason, Hagar demanded separate malachim for each statement. So the question is why? Rashi doesn't explain why, but why was it necessary to send her multiple malachim? Just send her one malach. Why can't one malach do the job and just speak to her and tell her, you know, all these things? But if you look in the psukim, it says in Tes, Vayomer lo malach Hashem. In Yud, Vayomer lo Malach Hashem. Yud Al, Vayomer lo Malach Hashem. It's very redundant. So why is it that Hagar demanded different malachim? What's the purpose of the Torah telling us that separate malachim are sent to Hagar? So what is that concept? So it's the second question in the Shir. Why did the Malach have to engage Hagar in conversation? And furthermore, why do we need multiple malachim? Why do we need multiple angels in this conversation with Hagar? Okay, let's go on. Yud Al. It says, Hinach Ara. When you go back to Avram and Sarai, you will become pregnant. Kimo hinachara de eshes manoach, just like by the case in Shoftim by Shimshon's mother. Violat bain kimo violedes vidomolo yashaft balvanon mekonenes ba'arazim. So it just means that you will give birth. Vikarash shimo tzivuihu. This was a commandment. It was a tzivui, a commandment on Hagar that she had to name him Yishmael. Kimo she'omer lezachar vikarasa shimo Yitzchak. Same thing, similar by Yitzchak, that it had to be, it was a commandment that his name be Yitzchak. So another question, why did his name have to be Yishmael? Why couldn't it be something else? Why couldn't Hagar just make up the name? Why did the Malach have to command her, you must name this child Yishmael? What's the significance of that? So we have three questions going on here. One question is, why was there any engagement and conversation with Hagar? The second question is, what's the need for many Malachim? And the third question is that the Malach commands, it's obviously a tzivoy from Hashem, that Yishmael be named Yishmael. Why was it so significant? Why couldn't Hagar just pick the name out herself? You know, let's say she liked the name Todd or Stuart or whatever she liked. Why couldn't she pick out the name that she liked? Why did it have to be Yishmael? So it's another question. Okay? So keep in mind, keep all these questions in mind, and if you have one answer, when we get to the answer, just just share your thoughts. But it doesn't have to, you don't have to answer all the questions, but one answer, I think if you focus on one idea and you have one answer, I think it could provide an opening into understanding this whole parsha and this whole idea in this paragraph. Okay. Let's go on to number seven, which is the Ramban. The Ramban actually explains. He explains a little bit further than Rashi. He says, "V'karash shemo Yishmael, hodia malach lahagar shiyash shemo Yishmael." So the Malach is telling Hagar that this will be his name. Kiderach hinei ben nola lebeis David Yoshiyahu shemo. So according to the Ramban, he's saying that it's not really a tzivoy at this point, but he's just telling her this is what will happen. He will be named Yishmael. The Amar lo shehi tikra'enu kein v'tizkor ki shamalo kim elnya. And he's basically saying that she should remember that God listened to her suffering, and this is what she should call him. It's the same question. Why did she have to call him this? Why was it necessary? The Avram me'atzmo karashmo kain sheyishmael kel vayanenu. But really, Avram himself named him Yishmael for a different reason, because Hashem listened to Avram's prayers, because Avram's tefillah was that he have a child. O shesharso lav ruach hakodesh kedivrei Rashi. Or there is a nevuah on a ruach hakodesh when he named him. V'kara'o so Yishmael kishamalo kemel ani imo kedvar amach. The other possibility is that Avram knew through nevuah that this child be called Yishmael because God answered the suffering of Hagar. Okay, and then he goes on, v'anachon be'inai, but he has a different shot. This is the Ramban's idea, ki amalach tziva l'hagar shetikr enokin, that the Malach commanded Hagar that she name him this, v'hi yira b'avur heyosa pilegesh likro shem leven adonea. She was nervous. She didn't think that she had the power, or she would have the power to name the child, but rather the power would go to Avram. V'gil solo ha'inyan v'avram kim dvar Hashem. So it's revealing to her that this will be his name, and Avram was Mikayim, this Devar Hashem. Okay, so it's very important. The Ramban is focusing and emphasizing the idea that it's very important that his name be Yishmael, similar to Rashi. And it's a question of whether it was a tzivoy or it's just telling her that this is what it's going to be like. But still, same question. Why did his name have to be Yishmael? It could have been anything. So why Yishmael in specific? Okay. Last question, the last question, Rashi. If you look in Rashi and Yud Beis, what kind of person was Yishmael based on the Psukim? It says that he's going to be a wild man, a wild donkey of a man. It says Yud Beis, Per Adam, Ohev Midbaros Latsud Chayos. He loved hunting in the desert. Kimoshe Kasu, Vayhi Rove Kashas, Vayesha B'Midbar Paran. So that's what he was. He was a hunter, Yishmael, and he would go around hunting food in the Midbar. Yadoba Kol Listim, he was a robber. V'yad Kol Bol, Hakol Soninoso, Mizgarnbo. Everybody hated him and they all wanted to attack him. V'alpnei Kol Echav Yishkon, she has Zaro Gadol. He would have many offspring, Yishmael, this individual. So the Malach is telling Hagar that she's going to have this guy who's going to be very powerful. He's going to be a hunter, but everybody's going to hate him and he's going to be a robber. So assuming that Hagar was on a somewhat of a perfected level, or she was somewhat on a high level, I wouldn't think that this would be so enticing, you know, telling Hagar or telling a person that, great, you're going to have a child, but this child is going to be a robber and everybody's going to hate him and they're all going to want to attack him. So why exactly is the Malach, how is this idea an enticement to Hagar to go back to Avram and Sarai? Why tell her this information, right? Why is this a good thing in the eyes of Hagar if seemingly she's on a relatively high level? The Torah wouldn't be telling us the story if she wasn't on a high level. So if she's on a high level and she has a certain perfection to her, why would she want to know that her child is going to be a robber and other people are going to hate him? It's not exactly something that you look forward to, or that you would look forward to. Okay? And then we have one last pshat, the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni has a different pshat. He's a little bit lighter than Rashi in terms of explaining Yishmael's personality. But the Chizkuni is Yud Beis. I'll read it inside. It says, Pera Adam, Tagar, Holech im Schor Raso, Ad Lemerachok, Bemakom She'in Makirnoso. He was really a businessman. And he would go very far to do business. Ke'inyan Shenamar, Orchas Yishmaelim, Ba'al Mil Gilad. So the Yishmaelim, they would travel everywhere to do business. Ve'ehe Sham Ish Pera, Adam Nachri, Nikra Pera, Kamada At Amar, Ve'ir Pera Adam Yulad. So Pera means a foreigner. He would go, Yishmael's personality was that he was very involved in business, and he would go all over the place to conduct business. Yado Bakol, his hand was on everything. Bechol Mine Schora, he had a vast control over business. Viyad Kolbo, Alide Maso Matan Shal Schora. So he had a lot of clients, and he had a lot of business. Ve'apnei Kol Echav Yishko, Nachalosa V'yispashtu Bein Kol Echav Mirovosher. And he was very wealthy, and he had a lot of land because of his wealth. Okay? So the Chizkuni is basically saying that Pera Adam doesn't mean that he's going to be a robber and everybody was going to hate him. It's not a reference to his power, but rather it's a reference to his wealth, that he would be very good at business and he would have a lot of wealth. So it's the same question, though. Why is it necessary for Hagar to know what Yishmael is going to be like in the future? Why is Hashem telling her this in this Nevuah? Okay? So let me just review the questions. There's really, I would say, four main questions. One, why did the Malach engage Hagar in conversation? Number two, the second question is, why many Malachim? Why were there multiple Malachim? Number three, why did the name of the child have to be Yishmael? And the last question is, what kind of enticement is it by telling Hagar that your child is going to be powerful to the point where everybody's going to hate him because he's robbing people if she was a perfected woman? Or like the fact that he was wealthy, why is that something that should entice Hagar to go back and to have a child with Avram? So those are all the questions. And we'll try to explain it with one key idea, one key point. Does anybody have an answer? Anybody have an idea or one answer to any of those questions? Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, speak.
Okay.
Well, I like the direction that's going in. I don't agree with you completely because I think that her motives are a little bit more pure, but I do understand what you're saying. Yeah, so I like the direction you're going in. So anybody else have any other possibilities or other questions that they want to answer? The multiple Malachim question or the idea that the Malach had to engage her in conversation? Okay. All right, if you want to answer, just feel free to cut me off in the middle. Okay, so there's one idea. I was thinking about the concept. I had one answer in mind, and then I saw that the Torah Tamir brings it down after the fact, and I saw the Chizkuni kind of mentions it too. So I'll give you the answer, and then I'll show you how it fits in to the Mefarshim, to the Rishonim, to Rashi, and how the story becomes really beautiful in terms of the lesson that it's conveying. So if we look at number 10... Not number 10, actually. Look at number 11. It says number 11, Bipnei Sarai Givirti. There's an interesting Gemara. I don't understand the full extent of the Gemara, but I have an idea. It says, Amar le Rava le Rabba bar Meri, Minaha Milsa de Amri Inshi, Chavircha Karyach Chamara Uchba le Gabach Mosh. I'm not sure if I read that properly, but the English is that how do we know, there's a famous statement that if your friend calls you a donkey, then what should you do? You should put a saddle on your back. So where do we know this from? Amar Lei, he said back, Dichsiv, Vayomer Hagar Shiv Chasarai, Emi Zebos. The Malach says to Hagar the maidservant of Sarai, where are you coming from? Vatomer lo, she says to him, Ipnei Sarai give your tea anochi borachas. Because of Sarai, my superior, that's why I am escaping. Okay, how does this make sense? What's the sense of this memra? So the Torah Tmima says, in number 12, Rotzalomer afalpi shehaya beliba tina al Sara becholze kara oso gevira. Even though Hagar, she thought improperly about Sarah, and she had improper thoughts about Sarah, nevertheless, she still refers to her as Gevira. V'hu kilfi lashon ha-malach shekara shivcha sarai. And this also fits into the lashon of the malach, who calls her shivcha sarai. Okay, what does that mean? The Chizkuni, by the way, says the same thing. He says, Hagar shivcha sarai, when the malach says, before Hagar answers the question, the malach says, Hagar shivcha sarai, lo kisha'at svura lios gevirta, it's not like you thought to be her superior, ki adain at shivcha. You are still her maidservant, vehi hodislo. And she was moded to this. Hagar was moded to this. Okay, so what's the meaning of this? How does this answer all the questions? So let's go back to the main question, or the first question, I would say, which is that, why did the Malach engage Hagar in conversation? Why not just tell her, go back? And I think the answer is that we got a little background about Hagar. Where was she from? She was really the daughter of royalty, and her father was a powerful king. And one would expect that a person coming from that type of family would expect themselves to feel superior, to feel empowered. And for her to be in a situation where she was second to Sarai would be, you know, it was a perfection on her part. It was a good thing because she and her father, it seems like, recognized that it would be to her benefit. But on the other hand, she gave up a lot. She had to give up on the idea that she was a superior, on her sense of royalty. And that's what the Midrash is telling us, that that's what happened to her. So why is what's the Malach trying to do? So the Malach is almost setting her up. Because if you look in the Pasuk, based on the Torah Tmima, the Pasuk says, See, the Malach is calling her Shivcha Sarai. And the Malach is referencing Hagar as the maidservant of Sarai. And there's two ways in which Hagar could answer the question. Either Hagar could get angry, and she could answer it, what do you mean? You know, Sarai is not my superior, I am her superior, which is how she felt and initially, and this is why she ran away. Or she could recognize the idea that Sarah was her superior philosophically, and she could recognize that there was a benefit to her being underneath Sarai. So the idea of Likanis La Bidvarm, to engage her in conversation, was that the Malach wanted to see how she would respond. See, if she would respond that, no, Sarah is not my superior, then maybe it wouldn't be proper for her to go back. It wouldn't be good for her psychologically. She wouldn't be able to tolerate being second to Sarah. But the fact that she answers, and she still calls her Gevirti, it says in the Pasuk, let's go back, it says, Vayomer Hagar, at the end, it says, Vatomer Mipnei Sarah Gevirti Anochi Parachas. The fact that Hagar is able to still recognize Sarah as her superior, as her boss, so to speak, the fact that she's able to do that, meant that she was capable of recognizing that idea and accepting the fact that she would be second to Sarah. Nevertheless, in order to gain the perfection of being around Sarah and Avram. So the key idea, I think it's the main idea, the key idea in this whole story is the ability, it's about the ability of Hagar to be able to recognize what she was relative to Sarah and be able to give up in an active way, in a bechira, in a choice, to give up her need for superiority and admit to the fact that she was second to Sarah. And that's why I think the Malach, that's the idea that she left. She left because she was in conflict, because she came from royalty and it was part of her very nature to seek out power and to feel powerful. And that's why Sarah became low in her eyes. But on the other hand, she did recognize philosophically that Sarah was on a higher level and she would have to subordinate herself to Sarah in order to gain from Avram and Sarah. And the Malach is setting her up in order to understand or in order to see how she would respond to being called Shivcha Sarah. And she responds appropriately. The fact that she calls Sarah her Gevirta means that she's still able to accept being second. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. Now, how does that explain all the other questions? So we'll see. So I think the Malach idea, what's the idea that there's multiple Malachim? See, each concept, each time there's a Malach, it means there's a unique concept being expressed. And that's the idea of dividing up the Malachim. Dividing up the Malachim are teaching you that each concept being expressed is a separate, distinct concept. Now let's look at them in specific. right after she says, you know, Mipnei Sarai Givirti Anochi Barachas, meaning she recognizes that despite her anger and despite her conflict, she still recognizes that Sarah is her superior. It says in Tess, looking back in Pasuk Tess, Vayomer La Malach Hashem, Shuvi Al Givirtech Visani Tachas Yadeha. So what's the first idea? The first idea is that Malach is saying that if you go back, it'll be beneficial to you. And because I see that you can tolerate going back, you should do it. Why? Because if you do it, it'll benefit you. It'll be to your benefit philosophically, personal benefit, to go back and to be under the hand of Sarah. So the first idea that Malach is saying is an idea in the personal perfection of Hagar, that it'll be beneficial to her because she can tolerate it to go back. And then we go on, look in Yod. Vayomer lo Malach Hashem harba arbe ezareich v'lo yisafer merov. The second idea, which is distinct from the first idea, is that by going back, by being connected to Avram and Sarai, only because of that will she be worthy of being the mother of a nation. So the second idea is that she will be worthy of being the mother of a nation, and a nation will sprout from her because of her connection to Avram and Sarah. Okay, and the last idea, which I think answers the concept of why the tzivoy, it says, "Vayomer lo Malach Hashem, hinach harav yolatz bein, v'karashimo Yishmael ki shama Hashem elonich, v'hu yeh per adam yadoba kov yad kolbo v'al pnei kol echav yishkon." So we said before that Rashi mentions that Hagar was commanded to call Yishmael, and it says that he's going to be a wild man, be very powerful, but be a robber. So why was that necessary? What's that idea? See, the third concept is saying that See, Hagar, she still felt like she was in pain, and it was still difficult for her to give up on the fact that she was once royalty. But on the other hand, the Torah is telling her, and the Nevuah is telling her, that she will experience some psychological satisfaction through her son being superior, being a warrior, being an intimidator. So the last idea is saying that it's not that Hagar will lose out personally from an emotional standpoint. She'll have to endure suffering because she's able to tolerate it. But on the other hand, ultimately, part of her reward is that she'll be able to experience the same satisfaction that she lost out through her child, through Yishmael. So even though Hagar was perfected, and she was on a high level, but from a psychological and a mental standpoint, this was necessary. The idea of Yishmael, the concept of the name expressing her pain, was necessary to connect her to her child, and so that she feels some sense of psychological relief and satisfaction through her child, through her son. That's why also, I think that fits in, that's why the Chizkuni is tying into wealth. See, the question is, what was so hard for Hagar? Was it hard for Hagar to accept the loss of power, or was it so hard that she wasn't as wealthy? She lost out on the wealth, the feeling of wealth. And the idea the Chizkuni is saying is that she would experience that through Yishmael as well. That she would get some psychological satisfaction over the fact that Yishmael would be wealthy. And if we look back in the Psukim, and I put it down in the source sheets, in number 10, it says that Paro, her father, was very wealthy, and he was the one who was responsible for making Avram wealthy. So you see that she was born in wealth, and she needed to experience that wealth, maybe not herself, but through her son, through Yishmael. So those are really the three concepts being expressed. Okay, so then let me just summarize that idea. And I think it's a beautiful idea. The background of Hagar is that she was very wealthy, and she was born in a powerful family. And the Malach wanted to see how she would react to a statement of calling her Shifcha Sarai. And she was able to overcome her anger and still recognize that Sarah was her superior, certainly philosophically, but she was able to recognize that, and she was able to tolerate it and to give up on her desire and her need for being superior. But on the other hand, there's three rewards or three ideas being expressed. One is that it would benefit her personally, philosophically, if she goes back. The second idea is v'lo yisafer merov, that she will benefit from a nation and national standpoint by being connected. But the last idea is that even though she feels the suffering now, she will get some type of satisfaction out of her son, and she will be able to almost feel a vicarious psychological satisfaction through Yishmael. And that's the idea of the story. That's what the story is trying to teach us, really, about Hagar's personality. Okay, any questions on that idea? Somebody asked a question. Come on. Is it clear? Does anybody want me to summarize the idea again?
Very clear.
Thank you. Do you want me to summarize it again?
Sure.
No. Do you want me to?
Can you summarize it again?
Sure. Okay. That the main concept is Hagar's response to the Malach. The Malach calls her Shivcha Sarah. You're the maidservant of Sarah. Now there's two ways which Hagar could have responded. One way is she could have gotten angry and said, I'm not her maidservant. I'm her boss. I came from royalty. I come from Paro. But the fact that she doesn't respond in that way, she says, Bipnei Sarah Givirti. Because of Sarah, my Givirti, which is like my boss, my superior, that's why I'm escaping, means that she was still able to tolerate and accept the fact that Sarah was her superior. And that was her perfection. That was a high level on the part of Hagar, that she abandoned her own need for superiority and for power and for wealth, and she was able to subordinate herself to Sarah. But the Malach was almost testing her, trying to get her and see how she responded, but she responded appropriately. Then the Malach tells her and gives her three concepts or three ideas, one being that you will benefit personally from being connected to Avram and Sarah. The other concept is also from a national standpoint, you will have a nation as a result of being connected to Avram and Sarah that you wouldn't necessarily have. And the last idea is that you have to call the son Yishmael. Why? Because a parent oftentimes gets a psychological satisfaction out of the child's success. And part of the nature or the identity of Hagar was a sense of suffering or a sense of, you know, she had to give up on being number one. But she would feel that through her child, through Yishmael. And that's why she has to call him Yishmael. He has to be called Yishmael so that it be nicker to her that, you know, some of that suffering be expressed through Yishmael, and that Yishmael give her that satisfaction that she's not number two. And that was the idea of the story. Okay, so that's really the idea, one of the main ideas of the shiur tonight. And I wanted to discuss one more idea, just one last idea, in the naming of the place. She names the place Ata Kel Roi, and if you look in number 13 in Rashi, why does she call it that? And it says in Yud Gimel, Ata Kel Roi, Nakud Chatov Kamat Mipnei Shu Shem Davar, it's a noun, Eloka Haraya, Haraiya, Sheroeb Elbon Shal Luvin. She's calling God, Hashem, Hashem who sees, the seer. Why? Because Hashem's able to see the humiliation of those who are humiliated. And then she says, Hagam Halom Lashon Tema. It's a question. She didn't think that she would be able to see Malachim in the Midbar, and she was shocked by the fact that she saw Malachim in the Midbar. She saw Malachim, angels, in the house of Avram, but she was surprised to see Malachim in the Midbar. So the last idea I just want to express is that Rashi seems to be focusing on the concept that Hagar recognized that Hashem could see even the most innermost thoughts of a person. And Hagar's whole attempt was to escape. And a person who tries to escape, they want to hide. The purpose of escaping is to try to not be found. And you want to be alone and you want to be hide. And the feelings that she felt were completely internal, humiliation. The idea of the naming is that God sees and he knows even man's most innermost thoughts, and he attempts to bring them out into public, but with regard to Hagar. With the Malach brought the feelings of humiliation out into the public, out into the open for Hagar, in order for Hagar to be able to recognize what she really wanted and what would benefit her. And that's the idea of the naming of the place. It's a recognition of the chesed and the hashgacha that was done to her in this situation. Okay, so that's really the shiur tonight on this week's parsha, Parsha's Lech Lecha. And the parsha and the area that we focused on was really the area of Hagar and her relationship with Sarah, and the purpose of the story of her conversation with the angels. And really, the purpose was to bring out in Hagar whether she would be able to tolerate being second to Sarah or not. And that was almost a bechira decision for her. It was her choice at that moment. Either she could answer the Malach and say no, or she could answer the Malach and recognize that Sarah was her superior and that she saw a benefit to being connected to Sarah. And that's how she answered, which is a very high level. She had to give up on all of those emotions and all the desires to be strong and powerful and to have wealth. And she gave that all up to be second to Sarah. And that was difficult for her. And as a result, she was rewarded. And how was she rewarded? A, you know, from a personal philosophical standpoint. B, from a national standpoint. And C, the idea being that she would get some satisfaction from the fact that she suffered through her son being powerful and being, you know, even though he was a robber. And at last, in the end of the story, she names the place Ata Kel Roi to recognize the chesed that Hashem did, that despite the fact that she was trying to hide, there's no way of hiding it from Hashem. And Hashem was able to see her humiliation and help her rectify it and recognize it and make the right decision to help her, you know, continue on the road to a higher level, to perfection. And that's really the idea of the story of Hagar and Sarai. Okay, so I hope that was clear. So that's tonight's shiur, and we'll continue next week with next week's parsha. So everybody have a good Shabbos. I want to wish everybody a good Shabbos.